Let's get down to business, taking a look at Wall Street. Dow Jones Industrial Average down 122 at 24,360. S&P 500 down 7 at 2,656. NASDAQ Composite down 33 at 7,106. Russell 2000, small and mid-caps, down 7 at 1549. Yield on the 10-year Treasury off 1 basis point to 2.83%. Oil up 23 cents at $67.30 per barrel. And gold up $11.10 at $13.46.40 per ounce. Despite today's decline, the major averages posted strong gains for the week. The Dow and S&P rose 1.8% and 2% this week, respectively. NASDAQ up 2.8%. J.P. Morgan Chase kicked off earnings season for the big banks, reporting earnings per share of $2.37 versus analyst estimates of $2.27 per share. The bank reported net revenue of $28.5 million compared to $25.8 million the bank posted in the same period a year ago. Citigroup reported a higher-than-expected quarterly profit, driven by strength in its consumer banking business and a surge in equities trading. Citi's net income up 13% in the first quarter. On a per-share basis, Citi earned $1.68, topping analyst estimates of $1.61. Total revenue rose about 3% to $18.8 billion. Operating expenses rose 2% to $10.9 billion. Global consumer banking revenue increased 7%. Equity markets revenue up 38%, gaining from increased volatility in the quarter. Citi reported a 10% drop in revenue from its investment banking business. Now, J.P. Morgan and Citigroup both beat estimates solidly. The two banks also posted gains in market revenue, with J.P. Morgan's markets revenue up 7% on an underlying basis, and Citigroup's total markets and securities revenue up 3%, but it wasn't enough. J.P. Morgan shares lost 2.7% today. Citi shares down 1.5%. Wells Fargo shares down 3.4%. Despite its ongoing woes, Wells Fargo reported a 6% jump in profit, saying net income applicable to common stock rose to $5.5 billion, or $1.12 per share, for the quarter ended March 31st. That compares to $5.2 billion, or $1.03 per share, a year ago, and analysts had expected $1.06 per share. Two U.S. regulators have proposed Wells Fargo pay $1 billion in penalties to resolve probes into auto insurance and mortgage lending abuses. Many of the problems for Wells started with the scandal involving bogus accounts, various banking accounts conjured out of thin air to artificially inflate sales figures. Wells was also accused of steering minority borrowers into loans they could not afford, resulting in higher fees, defaults, and foreclosures compared to white borrowers, and rewarding employees with bonuses for offering such loans. As recently as last month, the bank also said it was examining its wealth and investment management business for possible customer abuses, including overcharging and inappropriate referrals, that after inquiries from government agencies. To appease investors and regulators, the bank overhauled its operational structure, shook up its board, hired a new compliance officer, but this failed to impress the Federal Reserve, which imposed restrictions in February on the bank's growth, forbidding it to expand its balance sheet beyond 2017 levels until it makes internal changes that address risk management. For the big three banks today, the earnings were good, just not good enough. The S&P Banks Index fell 2.6%, the broader S&P Financial Index down 1.4%, the most among the 11 major S&P sectors. Now, interest rates are rising, and the money should be rolling in for the big banks, but the story isn't playing out like the bank executive said it would, and investors are taking notice. The banks don't seem to be getting the benefit from higher interest rates that investors once imagined they would. Yes, interest income rose more than 10% in the quarter for J.P. Morgan and Citigroup, but interest expenses were up in the 50% range. Loan growth was disappointing. Now that interest rates are rising, there's no great demand for borrowing. The bank's mortgage businesses weakened during the quarter. Low unemployment and a continued rising economy and stock market, especially in an expansion as long as this one, should produce a surge in lending. The tax cut was supposed to amplify that jump. Instead, lending at the largest bank, J.P. Morgan, rose just 0.2% in the first quarter from the previous three quarters. Wells Fargo's loans dropped by 1%, though some of that can be attributed to the bank's particular problems. Citigroup's lending was up 1%, but that stemmed largely from a push to expand its credit card business, which hasn't been going so well. In the first quarter, the bank had to increase its provisions for losses in its retail-branded cards by 16%. Higher interest rates were supposed to translate into much higher lending profits. That isn't the case either. Part of the explanation is that long-term interest rates haven't risen as much as short ones, compressing the lending profit spread. But banks also appear unable to hold on to as much of the benefit of higher short-term rates as expected. They've had to pass along some to consumers, who are their lenders. Net interest margins, which used to be in the 5% range, are still stuck in the 3% range. Higher interest rates were supposed to lead to more profits in the buying and selling of bonds, which used to be a chief driver of the big bank's profits. Volatility was up in the first quarter, and many expected that would translate into big trading profits. But it didn't, at least not on the bond trading side. Equity trading was a bright spot, but that's never been a big profit center. Bank stocks have traded up on the idea that the improving economy would produce more borrowing. It has not. So perhaps the problem is that the economy is not quite as good as people think. The banks may serve as the canary in the coal mine. Next week brings earnings from Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, U.S. Bank Corp., and Morgan Stanley. The University of Michigan's Consumer Sentiment Index in April fell to a reading of 97.8. That's down from 101.4 in March. There's a familiar sentiment that things are pretty good right now, but it'll get worse in the future. The index of current economic conditions fell to 115 from 121.2, while the expectations index declined to 86.8 from 88.8. Major concerns for respondents included possible trade wars and rising interest rates. Yesterday, Trump told his economic advisors to look at getting back into the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP. He tweeted, "Would only join TPP if the deal were substantially better." Well, today, ministers from Japan, Australia, and Malaysia welcomed the idea of the U.S. returning to the Trans-Pacific Partnership, but said they opposed renegotiating the deal. While much of the White House focus today centered around a new book by former FBI Director James Comey, the White House announced that Scooter Lewis Libby, the former chief of staff to Vice President Dick Cheney, has been pardoned. Libby had been convicted of perjury, obstruction of justice, and lying to investigators in the investigation into who leaked the identity of a CIA officer. Libby had his sentence commuted by President George W. Bush, but had paid a $250,000 fine, performed community service, and served 2 years of probation. Colorado Senator Cory Gardner issued a statement saying that Trump had promised him that he'll support congressional efforts to protect states that have legalized marijuana. There had been a standoff between Gardner, a Colorado Republican, and the administration over Justice Department nominees. Gardner said in January he would block all Department of Justice nominations after Attorney General Jeff Sessions issued a memo that heightened the prospect of a federal marijuana crackdown on states that had legalized it. Recreational marijuana has been legal in Colorado since 2014. Gardner said Trump told him the marijuana industry in Colorado would not be targeted. Marijuana is legal for medicinal use in 29 states and recreational use in 8. Marijuana stocks surged on the news. Canada's Canopy Growth, the largest cannabis producer by market value, up by as much as 11%. Medical marijuana supplier Aphria, up 21% in Toronto trading. Amazon versus the White House takes a new turn with Trump ordering an investigation of the U.S. Post Office. In the order, Trump calls on the task force to examine various parts of the Postal Service's business, including ones that appear to directly involve large parts of Amazon's business, although the order does not mention Amazon by name. The investigation includes the expansion and pricing of the package delivery market and the service's role in competing with other private delivery companies. The task force should look at the decline in mail volume and the implications for the service. The order also calls for the task force to look at the service's universal service obligation, which requires the service to deliver to everyone in the U.S. Arizona Governor Doug Ducey has announced his plan to give teachers 20% pay raises by the beginning of the 2020 school year. Under his proposal, teachers' pay would increase 9% in the 2018 school year, then another 5% for the next 2 years, which would boost the average salary to $58,130 from the current $48,372 by 2020. Arizona ranks 43rd in the nation in terms of how much it pays its teachers, according to the National Education Association. For weeks, educators have been holding rallies in Arizona. On Wednesday, they participated in walk-ins before class, part of a series of escalating actions sponsored by the Arizona Educators United Coalition. Ducey also proposed to restore education funding from recession-era cuts, with $371 million phased in over the next 5 years without raising taxes. The funding would be to support school resources such as infrastructure, textbooks, technology, curriculum, and school buses. Ducey was vague about where the cash would come from, only saying a growing economy and lower spending in other areas unexpectedly freed up about $274 million this year. Dow Jones Industrial Average today down 122 to finish at 24,360. S&P 500 down 7 at 2,656. And the NASDAQ Composite down 33 at 7,106. As always, follow along at moneyradio.com with live streaming and archived audio and the daily blog, eatthebankers.com.